Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.
Ryan, Home Field Apparel is supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio again for the 2024 season. And Ryan, they have more new great apparel. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to check out those coaches' jackets, but let me tell you, those things look so sweet.
They're incredibly nifty. If you haven't seen these, go to homefieldapparel.com, find the Gopher coaches' jacket. On the back of it, it's a maroon jacket, says University of Minnesota. It's going to bring you back to, say, you're watching Gopher football in the late 60s and you're looking on the sideline and you can see the head coach, the other assistant coaches wearing all these different things. This thing is freaking cool. Something you're going to want to rock around the tailgate lots or wherever you may be. So what we want you to do, go to homefieldapparel.com, check out the coach's jacket, check out all other things on this awesome, awesome place. And once you get to checkout, put in the promo code GG and the numbers 24 and get 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG24 at checkout to get 15% off your first order.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys. I guess welcome being a nice term for whatever in the world we had to sit through and endure last night between a delay that leads into, you know, as I wrote, Luke, the sloppy weather prior to the game and kind of mixed in during the game there led to exactly what you saw from your Golden Gopher football team as they were sloppy for 52 minutes of the 60 and they fall to North Carolina 19-17 at home. It's a game that we have a lot to discuss from. There's a lot of facets of this game that leave, if the comments on Twitter, the comments on Gopher Illustrated are any indication, there's a lot of questions that I think people want some answers to. And luckily, Luke, joining us for the non-conference is one of the smartest people I know in this world, with Derek Burns doing some things NIL-wise. He's not available here. So we have Mr. Gopher's guru himself, the man who now sits next to me in the press box and laments every single moment of his time, Daniel House. Mr. House, how are you today? Are you sick of seeing me quite yet?
Well, Burnsy, you're not going to be on the injury report. That's what I told him yesterday. He's sitting in the first row, and his neck, he had to lean back for the replay. So every game, I was going to add him to the availability report to see if anybody noticed it. But now he's got that nice second level view right at the replay, which he was just, it was like the best thing in the world for him last night.
It's like somebody maybe listened to the podcast and realized that like somebody should put him in the second row. He's complaining. Maybe
the fans rallied.
I think you guys are giving people over there too much credit because essentially the whole first row moved to the second row. If you haven't noticed with like, so essentially the bloggers were in the front, the quote unquote untraditional media, and then House got to get, House, how did you get elevated to the second row before?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's not a competition, but I'm just saying, you got up there with the pretty people before I did, but either way, I now get to sit between Daniel House, Dan Owen, and Andy Greeter. So I'm sure Greeter and House are going to be very, very sick of me. But to House's point, Luke, every game for the last 13 years, what I would have to do is, because I'm in the first row and the TVs are about eye level for the second row, is I have to push my chair back and then like look straight up to try and watch a replay of any kind. It was incredibly nice to, number one, just be able to lift my head up and look at the TV. Or if I had further questions, considering the amount of commercial breaks now, I could just look at Daniel House's laptop and we could go from there and dissect different things. But so blessed, so thankful to be on the second row next to House now, Luke.
I'm really glad that you don't have to be on these availability reports going forward, Ryan, because you know that we weren't going to make those available at least until 2 minutes before the game, not 2 hours, 2 minutes. So,
did you enjoy, by the way, that they released the availability report 2 hours before game time in terms of at six instead of five, no, even the delay? It's just like, goodness gracious, these aren't nuclear secrets.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh boy.
Okay, let's get into this game. Just a reminder quickly for those that listen to the preview, you know, when we looked at this game and we estimated or made our predictions, North Carolina was a 1-point favorite with a 50.5 over under. Ryan, congratulations on hitting on the under. I also hit on the under. Neither of us picked correctly. Minnesota covering that 1 point. But North Carolina wins 19-17. Basically, the Gophers go in at halftime with a 14-7 lead. They get outscored by 6 in the third, and then they get outscored by 3 in the fourth, ultimately to lose. I think we can all agree that the Gophers played not well. They were sloppy, ill-advised turnovers and penalties. But at the end of the day, they had an opportunity to win the game, and they just couldn't do it, Ryan.
They kept themselves in the game. It was incredible. I'm still struggling with words, House. Now, part of it is because I left the press box at 2:30, laid in my bed then until about 4 and got up at 7. So I might not be as articulate as I normally am on something like this, but House knows this. I was so mad throughout that entire contest because the moment they gave themselves any hope, they would shoot themselves in the foot with an ill-advised penalty, an ill-advised turnover. The North Carolina quarterback would try to give them the ball. Minnesota said, no, thank you. You can keep that. You can keep it right where it is. They just did everything that they possibly could to lose the game. And then, yes, Luke, we'll get to special teams later, but that was one of the most abysmal special teams performances I've seen. House, I went back and looked at it via game on paper. That was Minnesota's worst expected points added performance special teams wise since 2022 Iowa. There was essentially between what North Carolina did and what Minnesota did on special teams. North Carolina was more or less plus 5 there in expected points added. Minnesota was minus 5. Just incredibly egregious. But House, it's not just special teams. It was the whole thing. I just did not expect to see Minnesota lose in a way that I haven't seen them lose before. And that's where we've seen them lose because PJ has gone into a turtle shell, gets conservative, or the defense just doesn't have the personnel, or special teams does their thing. House, they were just sloppy. They're just sloppy from the get-go, and they never got out of their own way.
Well, and it was uncharacteristic when you look at PJ's teams in the past. Penalties is something that they're very strong in. I mean, they're top half of the country every year in penalties committed. You look at that game going back through it, so many moments where those penalties ended up dictating the outcome of a drive. You look at the strip sack early in the game, you're sending pressure. Deontay gets pressure in the strip sack, and then you recover, and it's called back for holding. Same drive, you got a hands to the face. Then you go later in the game, you got another holding penalty in the secondary. You got the false start, and then the holding on that last drive. That was unreal because the win probability swing was like 45%.
Yes.
Saw that alone on that holding call. just because of the field positions shift. And it was a positive run as well by Major. So, I mean, you look at all of those penalties. I do think that some of the stuff in the secondary is related to playing a little bit more man coverage than this team is typically used to.
Agreed.
So early in the year, you know, your technique, you're trying to figure that stuff out. But I actually thought Justin Wally played a really good game. I thought he was super physical. They included him in the nickel, you know, in the pressure packages as well. I thought some of their pressure stuff, especially on first down, was effective. The bigger thing was just like getting off of blocks in the second level, defeating blocks. North Carolina's offensive line did an outstanding job at generating vertical movement with their interior offensive line. And I thought that was a huge factor in the game. And then Hampton's just a stud. I mean, gosh, making people miss. And
14 missed tackles forced by himself.
Yeah, so let's start there. Like, I'm curious from your perspective, House. He definitely made guys miss. He also broke tackles. Was that more a function of him or just missed tackles by the players?
It's a combination of both skill, and then I think some of it is just like, you know, early season tackling fundamentals. Like, this is the first time you're simulating it. You're playing a special back right out of the chute. Block deconstruction, I think, was one of the biggest things there, like especially in the second half, being able to get off of a block. That was one of the biggest takeaways that I had. And I feel like, you know, they were doing some things schematically just to create an extra gap with their H-back. You know, they'll split zone flow, insert the H-back in occasionally just to try to alter things. But, you know, you got to be able to play the run effectively. The turning point in that game, I mean, you look at it, that 3rd and 4 completion from Max the opposite Johnson, hash, Max Johnson to Nesbitt with Wally in the coverage there, real tight, heck of a conversion. And you look at that drive, they kind of opened it up a little bit. They faked that counter orbit toss into the boundary. They had a tunnel screen, a swing pass there. Like, they kind of got more gadgety and creative with their play calling. But then, like, Chip Lindsey just like curled up inside the red zone several different times. So there were opportunities for Minnesota to creep back into that thing, but it was just execution lapses. There's just little details like throughout the game that I was noting, like, you know, a route spacing here or a block deconstruction there, or a tackle here, like all these little details, they add up over the course of games. So your fundamentals, that's going to be the big focus for Minnesota moving forward here, tuning up fundamentals.
So that throw House is referencing for folks who may not remember, is it was the first drive of the second half, and it's 3rd and 4, and he throws an absolute dart with Justin Wally's in a great spot, and that ball could only be put one place, and it was. Because if that just hits Wally or it just falls incomplete, whatever it may be, it's 14-7. North Carolina goes 3 and out. Minnesota just had momentum on offense. And if they can get anything resembling points, that was an offense for North Carolina, that if they had to throw the football more, that's going to play right into Minnesota's hands. And unfortunately for Minnesota, just like it was the entire night, they couldn't get out of their own way. And to House's point, I was not impressed by linebacker play last night. I wasn't live. I wasn't when I watched it back. When you look at the Pro Football Focus statistics, House, the linebackers are credited with 10 missed tackles last night. And Cody Lindenberg himself had 5. He was not highly graded. He was in positions to make plays, and he just didn't make enough of them. And that's where I know the counter argument to that would be, well, Ryan still led the team in tackles with 11, had a half tackle for loss. That's great. Those counting statistics don't tell the full story of he could have had 15 tackles. He could have had a couple more for loss. He's in the spot to make the play. He's just got to continue to make them. Or even, I think Maverick Baranowski played better than I thought initially, but Devin Williams was not good. Just, I'm going to be honest, folks. Pro Football Focus thought he was the worst player on Minnesota's defense last night. He had a rough game. He could not get off a block. He missed tackles when he was there. And when you're going against a back like Omarion Hampton, who, if you put yourself in space with him, he's going to do his thing, you have to be better than that. So I just – there were too many times, House.
Look at that sequence, okay? So, you know, you let them go on that.
You're talking about the Johnson sequence that starts the second half?
the long, long drive over 8 minutes. What was it? 17 plays.
Yep.
Yep.
Field goal. Then you come back and you got to drive, you know, the last a minute and 2 seconds, and the defense is right back on the field. Your play margin 27-4 in the third quarter. I mean, that is going to be a tough hill to climb, especially because, you know, they were just kind of accumulating. You know, you look at standard down success rate, 57% elite tier. You want that thing to be, you know, in that 30% range or under. And they were just staying on schedule offensively, just trying to milk it out. And I thought, you know, their play calling was better. But then they hit the red zone, screeching halt, and the kicker was outstanding. Chip Lindsey was
brutal. For people who don't know who Chip Lindsey is, Chip Lindsey's North Carolina's offensive coordinator. He was like, if you thought Greg Harbaugh's offensive play calling in the red zone was brutal, House, I'd argue Chip Lindsey's was exponentially worse.
I thought that, you know, Minnesota got themselves in a spot where, you know, offensively, they were kind of able to dictate from a pressure standpoint exactly what they wanted to do. Like, you saw some matchups where you're able to get Campbell in a favorable matchup versus Quinn Carroll. You saw that simulated pressure at the end of the game where Campbell whiffed on that third and four. That probably could have been the end of the ball game. Like, all night, I don't think people really realize how big of a challenge that scheme is to go against in the first week, especially since Jeff Collins had a year off to just sit and study stuff and implement new wrinkles. Like, for Brosmer to play his first game in the Power Four against a team with that type of defensive structure, moving people around, stemming, sending pressure from different spots, altering looks, you know, they come into pressure and fan out into Tampa 2 or Cover 2. I mean, it was pretty complex stuff throughout the night. So I think that was some of the thing that gave Minnesota some trouble, was all the different presentations and how they set it up.
Well, let's keep it defensively. I also would say that I thought Jahdae Joyner played well. I mean, someone that we thought was going to be a good player coming into the season, he was able to generate pressure. But I thought he was pretty stout against the run, forced a fumble there, which – I have no idea how Coleman Bryson, and then I think it was Danny Strigow, didn't come up with that football. The story of the night for Minnesota's defense, where I'll say it once again, North Carolina's quarterbacks did everything they could to give Minnesota the ball, and Minnesota only took it away one time. That's where, on that takeaway, the Justin Wally interception, House, you had Jack Henderson come in on a blitz on the outside, but then you also had Jalen Logan Redding on the interior pressure, something that nothing gets Daniel House's juices flowing more, Luke, than interior pressure defensively. Now, I'm going to let House explain why he believes that's so important, because I've heard about it for years now from Mr. House, and I think it's something that he needs to detail for the lovely folks here about. Daniel, why is interior pressure so important for a defense?
Spent a lot of time studying it over the years. I think, you know, if you can get good interior push, it impedes vision lanes. It forces the quarterback to alter throwing angles. You don't have clean pockets to step up into. And then if your edge players are really good at containing the pocket, setting hard edges, you're going to create a situation where the quarterback can't scramble around. They're going to have less space to work. And I think that's advantageous. And then, like you see with North Carolina's personnel in the interior, like, you got Ritzy, who you can get mismatches for. You can move Josh Harris around. Like, they had really good versatility in the interior, that defensive line, and in their edge room. So that opens up a ton of possibilities. So I say that interior push is important. I thought JLR had a couple of reps where that was the case. I also thought that Jack Henderson was really involved in things last night, kind of what I was expecting. You know, just the pressure schemes as a nickel within Heatherman's defense. You go back and look what he's done at first down at stops, you know, the type of packages that he wants to put in. Henderson setting hard edges, doing a really good job of playing with good fundamentals. He's going to be a very important player for this team throughout the season.
So I want to just work in some counting stats here before we continue to talk about defense. But You know, in this 19-17 loss, the Gopher defense, you know, they only gave up 252 yards. Omarion Hampton had 30 carries for 129 yards in total. Like, I think that's probably what you expected out of him. You maybe did okay there. They really struggled passing the ball. They completed passes, but they were 14 of 23 for 105 yards, with one of those being a fairly long gainer. So, you know, their average yards per pass was 4.6. We did force an interception that Justin Wally had. And then just, you know, a 3.6 yard rushing average was fine. I think the thing that really stuck out to me on this, though, is the 8 of 16 third down efficiency. That's probably where this game is won. You did beat them in terms of fourth down efficiency, where they were 0 for 1. You did get a turnover on downs, but yeah, that 8 of 16. And it goes back to the, I think, Ryan, you mentioned this earlier, the expected points added as it related to penalties, right? I think a lot of that's probably attributed to the defense. The Gophers were a minus 3.12, and North Carolina was a positive 3.3. Like, that's massive, and a lot of those resulted in drives being extended on third downs, for instance.
Well, let's keep it a third down there, because that's a great place I wanted to take it next. Was North Carolina House had 16 third downs, and they converted half of them. And then in comparison, Minnesota was 3 of 12 on third down. Now, what was the biggest difference, in my opinion? Now, we'll talk about Minnesota's offense here in a bit, but Minnesota's average distance on 12 different third downs was over 8 yards. That is not where you want to be. Compared to North Carolina, their average distance on those 16, I will say it again, 16 different third downs was about 5 yards. Turns out, House, that when you're in third and manageable constantly, especially in the second half, it's so difficult to get off the field, which we talked about it in the offseason. Minnesota was one of the worst third down defenses in the country last year, and now you just allowed over 50% of them to be completed on game one. What did you think about how did it end up happening where Minnesota's defense just could not get off the field, especially in that second half?
I just thought that the play calling early in that first drive out of halftime, I mean, they really started to...
You're talking about North Carolina's play calling.
Yeah, North Carolina's play calling out of halftime. I thought that they got a little more gadgety. They were able to, you know, tunnel screen it, swing pass, slip screen on the backside, building off of some of the run game stuff that they showed earlier in the game. There was definitely an intent that, like, they wanted to set some stuff up from the first half and kind of build off of it, get Minnesota in a spot where maybe they're anticipating something and, you know, be able to keep themselves on schedule offensively. I think that's the story of the game. Like, that third quarter, when you look at, you know, first down, second and six or fewer, third and four or fewer, the execution, you put yourself in a spot where, you know, Hampton is able to grind out yardage, make people miss. I thought that the offensive line for North Carolina just, they really, really did a good job in the run game. Like, they sustained blocks, they generated vertical movement, they created creases for Hampton, and he was able to really press the hole, accelerate, run through tackles. I mean, do what he does best, which, you know, that was fun to watch him live. I thought he was, you know, really, really good.
All right. The other thing I just wanted to note was, you know, we often talk about the middle eight, right? Those 4 minutes at the end of the first half and the beginning of this second half combined make the middle eight. Minnesota really closed well on their late possession. They were a 3.88 on six plays in the middle eight. But then, to your point, House, that third quarter is really kind of what defined the tone of the second half. The Gophers kind of played that bend but don't break. North Carolina ends up being a 3.2 in EPA on 11 plays in the middle eight. But yeah, it's back crushing when you have to be out there so long on kind of consecutive plays, when you go three and out like they did after that first long 17 play possession. That was just really draining and tiring for that defense. But again, one thing I wanted to touch on, while the defense had untimely penalties, that's really what kind of resulted in their touchdown. Give them credit, they earned it. They very well could have been a turnover, but it felt like a little bit bend but don't break on the defense last night. So House, was that a function of the Gopher defense playing better or some of the limitations this North Carolina offense had in their inability to punch it into the end zone?
Yeah, I thought play calling in the red zone was interesting at times. I mean, there's that one where
the, I like the term interesting there, House. It is okay to say nothing. You can say something negative.
Well, zone read with Johnson, long developing short toss, then try to screen, slip through a tackle, field goal. And I just think that, like, you look at these possessions, Minnesota. I was watching a lot of the stuff back, going the amount of man coverage that they were playing at times. I think that, like, it's going to take a little bit of time for these guys to kind of adjust to playing that. Like I said, that led to some of those holding penalties that ended up being really critical. And then Zaquon almost had that pick six. I mean, he had tight coverage there. You think about if he's able to secure that. I mean, there were so many plays that were close in that respect. And I actually thought, you know, defensively, the pressure schemes and how some of those things were timed up, it was critical. The flow of the whole game changed when Wally got the interception.
100%.
And that gave them that jolt. You felt like they needed that jolt, and you got that big takeaway. They had other takeaway opportunities, you know, like the strip sack that got negated by a penalty as well. So it was like Burnsy said earlier, you know, moment. You felt like there were times that they could claim that momentum, but then it was like three steps forward, couple back, you know, and that was the story of the game.
Well, that's where I've said it a few times before, but let me explain. Minnesota's defense had so many opportunities, and it's
they did.
Jontae McMillan forces the fumble. Cody Lindenberg falls on it at the North Carolina 10-yard line. Great. Well, guess what? Aiden Goosby is in poor position there and gets caught with a holding, which if you go back and watch, I have it in the GIF rewind on Gopher Illustrated. He's got inside leverage help there from Kerry Brown House.
Yeah.
And I'm not incredibly sure what's going on there. He gets faked out inside, the receiver breaks out, and he just holds him egregiously for about 4 seconds. It's going to be called every time. You can't get beat the way he did there and then take away a turnover. You have Zaquan Bryan where the ball is essentially thrown right to him. Now he gets his head around a little bit late, but it hits him in the hands. If he catches that, he might walk into the end zone. He just needs one block to do so. You have Jod Joyner force a fumble after Max Brosmer fumbles. Danny Strigow and I think it was Coleman Bryson are right there. Neither of them come up with the ball in the scrum. I mean, there's opportunities to be – like, there's only so many opportunities you're going to get in a game. And you made it – with Justin Wally's interception, you took advantage of one of those. But we're almost up to an additional 4 or 5 that they just couldn't get out of their own way. And it's just – it felt like 2023 at times where they're going to throw the ball to you a couple times a game. These are college quarterbacks. I'm not out here watching Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen. They're going to make mistakes. And I just you have to take advantage of the things that are given to you. The low-hanging fruit is going to be there, and you just have to take advantage of it. Or even to House's point, or I think it might have been you, Luke, these defensive penalties just in general just killed them.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a 3rd and 10 where Justin Wally gets pressure, forces an errant throw. It's going to be 4th down. They're going to punt. I think it's Zaquan Bryan gets called for a holding. The drive extends. They get points on it. Devin Eastern on that same drive that Aiden Goosby gets caught for the holding. It would have been 3rd and 8, a place where North Carolina didn't convert any 3rd and longs offensively the entire night. Devin Eastern gets his hands underneath the face mask, pushes it up, automatic 1st down, 15 yards. It's like any time there was a penalty for the Gophers, it just had massive implications on this game. I mean, you gave North Carolina essentially 10 of their 19 points that way, House.
Well, and they timed that one pressure up really good with that 3rd and long nickel blitz with Wally. I mean, he beat Hampton in pass pro, and then like you say, like those pressure packages timed up well. They're able to affect the quarterback, but then when you have, you know, things in the secondary that cause a penalty, you can't take full advantage of it. So I felt like there were flashes there. I mean, from a package standpoint. They put some of those 3x1 overload fronts in. Wrote about that on the website this offseason about being able to get matchups for JLR and Ant, get them out on and Jaw all on the field at the same time, and then be able to move Cody around. They had a look where they had Cody Lindenberg and Coleman Bryson mugging in the A gap and then drop out into Tampa 2. Like, I mean, you look at what they were able to do pressure wise, some of the things that they implemented in, I thought there were cool looks, but now it's like details, fundamentals, tackling, all of those things, putting the whole package together is going to be the key moving forward. You can't be in a situation where you let the other team dictate the flow of the game on first and second down. And then when you get into your passing down situations, you have a mistake like penalties. Like, it's just, it's a bowling ball rolling toward the pins, you know?
It was interesting to hear, Luke, that after the game, we were talking with Justin Wally, and I forget what the question was specifically. I think our friend Andy Greeter is the one who asked it, but Wally just said, I think a handful of times, it was defensive issues because of lack of details. Mm-hmm. And it's concerning to hear that, even though I do believe that's reality, from for a sure. month long of practice. Now, again, you're going against an offense that you maybe don't know how they're going to deploy personnel, different schematic things. That's going to look a lot different here as more film becomes available on each subsequent Gopher opponent. But when the senior leader in Justin Wally is saying that, Luke, lack of details is why the execution defensively was lacking, it's certainly something that caught my attention and something I'm going to be paying close attention to here over the next few weeks.
All right, so maybe let's wrap up with defense there. And yeah, let's catch an ad here, and then we'll come back and talk special teams and offense, and then we'll close it out. Once again, the Burns Insurance Agency is here to work for you, the Gopher Gridiron Radio listener. Ryan, insurance is something that we need, right? If we have a home, a boat, maybe an automobile, a motorcycle, etc., right? And Bill Burns is going to work for you, the Gopher fan, in a time where insurance seems to keep rising and rising. He is the one that is going to work for you to save you money and get you better coverage.
Myself, and turns out many of our loyal listeners have switched to the Burns Insurance Agency, and myself, here in the last few weeks, were able to save over $250 when my renewal notice came up for my home insurance. And guess what? Every single year, the Burns Insurance Agency looks when you are renewing to see if there's a better coverage with a better price. You don't have to do anything. They do it for you. And I'll be saving over $250 by just having my insurance with the Burns Insurance Agency. So what I want you to do, check them out online at insurancebyburns.com. Or if you're thinking about my auto, my home, my commercial business, whatever it may be, I want to get a free quote. Email this lovely Gopher fan today at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Ryan, not everyone is in the home market, but when they are, they should be reaching out to Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group, because if you're a Gopher fan and you want to move the needle in helping the Gophers, you can support Dinkytown athletes by working with Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. 1% of the total sale price is going to go to the team of your choice. So maybe you like volleyball or softball, or maybe you like football or basketball. You can make that election. Maybe you want to support all the sports. It doesn't matter. It's your choice, and it's a way that you can support the Gopher sports athletes just by selling or buying your house.
And I'm looking at all these houses that they've sold. Luke, they're selling these things $20,000-$30,000 over asking. So if you're worried, well, I want to support Gopher Athletics, but I want to make sure I got a quality realtor, the people at Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group are going to have you covered. So check them out today at teamdinkytown.com, or give them a call at 612-250-8562.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about when the Gophers were on special teams. I know that's the kind of the elephant in the room here. Ryan has kind of got this online persona as anti-special teams, or not anti-special teams, but what's your persona? Just like the one who's paying so close attention and calling it out consistently. You have your soapbox, whether it's this podcast or other ones, or you're on the radio or your website. It's something you haven't really let up. let up on. But frankly speaking, Ryan, this was a big difference in this game. I mean, if you look at the EPA for this one, it told a bad story. I tweeted during the game.
10-point swing for what is essentially adds up to, what did you have, Luke? This is your baby, and I want to give you credit for this. I think between the two special teams, they both were on the field for 10 to 15 plays in general. So to have, say, 15% of the game have a 10-point swing in EPA is just gargantuan.
Yeah. So just to put that in context for people, North Carolina had a 5.8 expected points added.
Plus
5.8. Yep. When they're on offense, the Gophers were a minus 4.78. We all know that Dragan Kesich missed.
Not offense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, special teams. When Dragan Kesich was kicking, he did miss two field goals. One, the 27-yarder, and then was the last one 45 yards? I can't remember off the top of my head.
47.
47. He missed the last one at 47. Definitely enough leg on both of them. Just missed right, one hitting the upright. And obviously, that's a big swing. I think the thing that stuck out and then was curious to me, I'm going to actually go to House first. We're going to try and continue to build the suspense into getting to Ryan. New coordinator, and it really looked the same. The returns looked the same, House. The strategy in terms of kicking it deep largely looked the same, getting touchbacks. This is a personnel thing in that Mark Crawford is kind of boom or bust, and we saw that again. But, you know, from a schematic standpoint, did you feel like it was looking more the same, even though we have a new coordinator in Ligashevsky?
I think from a strategic standpoint, yeah, I mean, you're going to value field position. I think, you know, I'm a little bit more in the field position camp than most people when it comes to returns. I think that dictating the game in terms of field position margin is really important. You look at how teams win games, and when you're able to have strong field position margins, it gives you a better chance to win. I think flipping fields is important, but I also think you got to strike the right balance between being aggressive and like know when to do it. So like end of halves, you know, you need to make a play. There's minimal time on the clock. You're going to run it out. But for the most part, you're going to, you know, value the field position because it makes a huge difference. It might not seem like it, you know, starting 10 yards a different field position, but over the course of the game, it adds up and it can contribute to, you know, your success offensively and defensively. So I think, you know, being strategic with it is important. I think Minnesota will continue to do that moving forward. But you look at like illegal formation penalties, had two of those. Those are little detailed things that you absolutely have to clean up. And then, you know, I think the other aspect of this is operational. I mean, you look at like the specialists, they've had continuity there since 2019. Brady Weeks is snapping the football since 2019. Now you got Alan Suka, first year long snapper in there. You know, operationally, there's going to be some new things. And I think that's something to watch for. You know, I felt like early in the season, maybe that like, how is that timing going to be? How is everything going to work out early on in the season? And, you know, there was change there. So that's something to keep an eye on moving forward.
Before I speak, Luke, do you want to tell people what you tweeted out?
What did I tweet out? I've tweeted a lot of stuff in the last 24 hours. Are you talking about the meme that I tweeted?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you want to go on Twitter and see what I tweeted, my Twitter is Luke Buer, LukeBuer. But I made a meme. It's from Scooby-Doo, and there's the guy who's wrapped up in the ropes, and he's wearing he's got something over his head, and I put the name Bob Ligashevsky, and the guy's gonna pull the mask off of him, the guy that's pulling it off, I put Ryan Burns, and then the next picture is the mask pulled off, and I put Rob Wanger on the masked man. So, yeah, Ryan, I'll let you take it from there. I was poking fun at you. I'm sorry.
It's here. I mean, I'm here for the bit. But I'm beginning to wonder if maybe all of my years of angst towards Rob Wanger should have been towards Philip John Fleck.
I mean, it's a really, really, really fair is kind of like the implied point of what I'm making, right? Like,
I know.
Yeah. So
it's just, it's truly remarkable how it started as somewhat of a bit that special teams were just incredibly bad. And now it's just become year after year after year, the same things keep happening. And now new things just sink them. It's, I mean, I didn't have on the scorecard last night, Dracon Kessage smoking the right upright from 27 yards.
I mean, you guys, do you think that me picking him in the first round of our draft maybe put more pressure on him? Do you think he knew that?
I think that's the only reasonable explanation. So if you want to direct all of your hate mail towards Luke Buehr, I can be sure to give you his address here in Roseville, and you can send him all of your thoughts and feelings. I know many of you have slid into my DMs and emails and go for illustrated things, loathing and lamenting it. But I mean, I think the kick that bothers me more, and look, Dragan Kessich is human. He's liable to have a bad night. That was the worst game of his collegiate career, and it sucks that it happened on an opening night where he's got to be able to make a 27-yard field goal. And then he – now, House, I have been corrected by many a golfer because I said he pushed it right. Turns out he pulled it right, and there's a difference because I have no idea anything about, like, a golf swing, and I assume that's where this thing comes from. And I know you're the big golfer, so I can't believe you haven't corrected me there. But, I mean, you think – that just a year ago, that opening game, Dragan Kessich nails it against Nebraska to give him the win. Now, I know there's also some conspiracy theories going around where there's some fans upset, and I'm not exactly seeing the forest through the trees on this one. So, House and Luke, you can maybe try and guide me here. But there were some people upset that Minnesota ran the football and moved it back to the right hash. My only thought there being, I bet you they asked Dragan Kessich, what side are you more comfortable from? And yeah, he did miss the one from the right hash earlier in the game. But if we're just going to think of every individual kick as its own entity, you're going to ask the reigning all Big Ten kicker of the year, where do you want to kick it from? So that's where my head goes. But before I continue on, did anyone else have these qualms that I know many a fan had about, why are they running the football, or at least running it to the right hash where he already missed?
I don't know that I had a qualm. I found it interesting having kicked myself. I always preferred to try and have more space to pull it, but it's not that big a deal. He's going to be fine.
House?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's probably information being shared there with, like, what do you want to do? Where do you want it? Like, I think that happens in pretty much every level of football. You're asking your kicker, and you're taking the information that you have in practice. Where does he like it, you know, when you're setting up situations? So, I mean, there's plenty of data available there to basically determine what you want to do. But, I mean, I don't know. It special teams is a huge layer to success. You have to be very strategic with it, I think. Early in seasons, it can be a little tricky because how much did you invest in it in the spring and the fall? How many of your players maybe came in late? How young are those players? I think special teams can tell you a lot about your roster. And I think you have to be patient with it in the sense that, like, sometimes it takes time to get there based on where your roster's at. So I guess I want to see the corrections that are made in the next couple of games. Is there tangible improvement over the course of the season? Just on detail things. I think that's the bigger area more so than the strategic side of it. I think it's just like cleaning up illegal formation and those type of things, cleaning up the kicking, getting the timing and everything mastered. That's going to have to improve over the course of the season.
Well, the hope would be it's not an issue now for Dragan Kessich, and he's not in his head. I would imagine he's going to have plenty of opportunities here over the next month to try and get over these yips. But the two illegal formation penalties, two of them on the first three punts of the season, is laughable. It's inexcusable. I mean, you can't have that happen at all. I mean, you allow a 20-yard return on a punt. On top of that, you add on the additional 5 yards. You then have conflicting penalties, so you have to repunt. And then the repunt, it's only a 30-yard shank. Don't get me started on the return game where you return one punt for 5 yards, but then you Here's the one, Luke, that is going to bug me more than the average person. North Carolina's punting out of their own end zone. Do you know where Quentin Redding is standing?
The four, opposite 45?
He's standing at the 50-yard line, so he's assuming that ball is going to be 60 yards in the air. In what world is that ball going to... Like, if he just catches, fair catches this football, Minnesota gets the ball at the North Carolina 42. Instead, he's way too far back. The thing rolls 18 yards.
So, yeah, I get it, and it's a 22-yard loss. Okay, so question, House, for you on this. Do you believe that's coaching or that's Quentin Redding? Because I can't remember, and listeners, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't remember somebody letting so many balls bounce and not catching them in the air.
I actually wrote a big piece on this a while back, doing a study on bounce and punting and catching, why you should catch punts, and basically looking at how much yardage you can lose based on the ball bouncing. And where you want it to bounce, like if you want it to bounce, you know, if it's inside the 10, it's going to bounce in the end zone. Like the different ways that you should strategize utilizing bounce, both to benefit you in a multiple different ways, both as a punter and a return man. So I think, like, yeah, you definitely want to be in a position where you're going to minimize the amount of times the ball is touching the ground based on where you are on the field. Obviously, I always like to distinguish in punting, whether it's a coffin corner punt or, you know, an open field punt, two different things. You know, your strategy is changing. You're more directional. You're trying to pin versus an open field punt where you're going to cut it loose. And then the returner, you know, they're going to have to decide, probably running up and catching is the best bet because it's going to roll out naturally and you're going to lose field positions. So I'd say, you know, from a strategy standpoint, on open field punts, I would say most of the time you're going to want to catch the ball. It just depends on, you know, there's always outlying factors, but I'd say that's probably the case most of the time.
Yeah. So in this situation, this is probably a personnel decision, not necessarily coach this way. At least the logic wouldn't make sense. And then on that one, Ryan, I think you maybe sent me the GIF, but did it look like they went for the punt block on that and they just didn't get there?
No, I think they were setting up. I don't know what they were doing, which is the story of a lot of gopher punts. I don't know if they're going for the return. I don't know if they're going for a block, if they're just kind of out there to be out there at times. But that's kind of a whole different discussion with all that. But if you just fair catch that football.
Yeah, I agree.
But this is why it's important, is because think about his punt returns that day. He gave them 5 yards of field position on one return. Great. Mm-hmm. But he also lost 18 yards of field position because he didn't field that football. So it's a net negative. And then you look at North Carolina on the flip side, they had a 20-yard return. Like, you were an L there. House, I don't think you heard me as animated all night until you saw the opening kickoff when it was Quentin Redding and then Jordan Newbin. The Jordan Newbin thing is very peculiar to me. Jordan Newbin is a lot of good things for this offense, but the one thing that I don't believe that he is compared to Christian Driver or Coy Parrish or Kristen Hoskins is elusive. And that's what I think you need to be as a really good kick returner, yet he was the guy out there. So did it surprise you that Jordan Newbin is the other kick returner with Quentin Redding?
I guess I wasn't surprised. I guess I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. Like, they were rotating so many guys when we were there, like, which one are they going to pick? We didn't really get a good look at it until last night. I'm wondering what they're going to do in the return game, you know, like moving forward. You know, I always look at a guy like Hoskins or somebody, you get speed, some suddenness back there. I think, like,
well, heck, even Coy Parrish is out there on kickoff return. He's just blocking.
Yep, you got Coy, you got Hoskins. I think, like, the thing about it is, like, I don't know, we're not at practice every day, so it's kind of hard to get an assessment of player eval, like, what are the strengths and weaknesses? But, like, on paper, skill set wise, speed standpoint, what they can bring to the table athletically, you know, I think that, like, especially in, like, a high leverage spot where you feel like you need a jolt, I'm always one of those guys, like, great way to jumpstart your team is to just put one of your most athletic players back there on a kickoff in a certain spot and say, hey, let's try to get a huge play here to give your team an energy surge. I'm a huge fan of that.
For example, Antoine Winfield being put back there against New Mexico State a few years back.
Yeah.
And now we haven't seen that in, 7 years.
Yeah, so we're 12 minutes into special teams talk.
All right, I'll wrap it up with this, then we can just talk offense. It's just, I say this every episode. I say this every time I read a game recap. My one question, House, and you can tell me if this is unreasonable. I ask myself one question about Gopher special teams. Did they help or hurt the team today? And without question, without a shadow of a doubt, they were a negative, especially when the North Carolina kicker was absolute nails all night long. Now, it wasn't just Dragon Kessage. I want to make that clear. It's the entire, like, the game one of the Bob Ligashevsky era was the biggest.
It left some to be desired.
I've got a lot of thoughts and feelings, and it's just, there's nowhere to go but up from here.
Yeah, I think the meme was appropriate, so. Okay, let's talk about when the Gophers were on offense. The Gophers amassed 244 yards of total offense. They had 166 through the air. Max Brosmer was 13 of 21, about 62%. They averaged 7.9 yards per pass. And then conversely, rushing the ball, they ran the ball 33 times for 78 yards and a 2.4 yard average. Marcus Major was your top rusher. He had 20 carries for 73 yards for a 3.7 yard average. Other guys receiving carries were Christian Driver, Daniel Jackson, kind of liked that little wrinkle. And then Jordan Newbin had two carries. Brosmer obviously got sacked and had a couple carries, that one that led to a fumble. So let's start here. Maybe first, running the ball. One quick observation is you see a single back getting the majority of the carries, in the carry distribution, that being Marcus Major. I like the suddenness. I think he's going to complement Darius Taylor well. Where Darius Taylor is a more patient runner, he tends to also be a little bit more north and south, but Marcus Major, there's a little bit more shiftiness there. He did have a long of 19 on the day. So House, just running the ball, what'd you like? What didn't you like?
I just thought that it was a little inconsistent, especially in the second half. You know, I felt like North Carolina was definitely mixing things up, moving guys around, sending players from different spots, which I think makes identification hard. I asked Marcus Major about that after the game, just the ID in the run game. He sets a big challenge, you know, trying to figure out your numbers, trying to get in spots where you can get yourself hats on hats and, you know, run the ball effectively. I didn't think that they were as strong in that area. Like the first half, you look at that one run that they had to get in the goal to go situation and use jet motion to displace the third level defender and clear out space. And then Major made a great cut. You know, he's a good one cut runner. He's got great, I think he's got plus vision. He sees the field really well, is able to press the hole, sharply cut back, accelerate downhill, fall forward for yardage. Like, he's definitely that zone scheme runner. And I think that fits what Minnesota's looking for in complement to Darius when he is able to come back. And I thought the first half that was able to help them a little bit more. Second half, I think, you know, the looks that North Carolina was throwing out and their commitment to stopping the run, that was a big, big element of the game. You know, you look at that drive. I mean, again, it in the second half there, the first drive after the long, like, 8-plus-minute drive from North Carolina versus offense.
That's North Carolina 17 really plays. Wrong.
So you come back, you got a three-level bootleg crosser out play action, incomplete to Jackson. You got a run for minimal. And then, you know, you got the passing downs package from North Carolina. They got Ritzy over the nose on third and nine. You get the matchup you want with Driver out of the slot. He gets open. Little pressure off the edge from Rucker. Couldn't connect on that play. And I think that was a critical play. Like, if you convert that, maybe you're able to find some sort of flow. And when your play margin is 27-4 in favor of North Carolina, I mean, you can't really do much offensively in the third quarter. And then they just didn't have the ball a ton. You know, I thought then in the fourth quarter, you saw, you know, that use of tempo a little bit, getting the ball out quick, yak a little bit with Elijah Spencer making a play after the catch, and then that weird, you know, you get the Brockington fumbling it forward and then, you know, Major advancing it. Like, it was just a weird second half. Like, I don't remember in a long time where it was like that big of a play disparity in the third quarter of the game. So I thought that was kind of the stark takeaway, that they could not complete that third and nine situation. And again, long down situation. I mean, the average third down to go distance was 8.1 yards in that game. You got to put yourself in manageable down and distances, especially against a defense like this that is going to mix things up, especially when you get into passing downs. You got so much you have to account for. I thought that scheme was just outstanding by Collins. They're going to give people a lot of trouble. They're going to try to run the ball, play really good defense at UNC, because that's going to be the formula for them moving forward.
Well, that's the thing with Minnesota's offense, and we'll get to Max Brosmer's debut and how it didn't go as I think House and I expected, but Minnesota's inability to run the football is what stood out to me most importantly last night. Is I think their sack adjusted numbers, they only ran for 102 yards, and that was on 3.6 yards per carry. So where I want to start first is with the offensive line. I mean, I had been preaching that this could be the best offensive line in the Fleck era, and I still think it has a chance to be, but they didn't play that way last night. They certainly did not. I think right tackle is a gigantic issue. I know that Minnesota's going with Martez Lewis right now, but that was not the performance that he wanted to put on tape last night, whether in the run or the pass. I know Pro Football Focus had him as the lowest graded offensive lineman there. Looked like Quinn Carroll got banged up. I think I noted that to House in the press box. I forget if that was in the second or third quarter, House, where he went in to push the pile and he came up lame on his shoulder. I ended up toughing it out for the rest of the game, but he also struggled on giving up a sack. But I was surprised, House, with two things, and I'll let you dive into both of these. Number one, the inability to get any push, especially in the second half. It seemed like four of the five guys, and it was a different four seemingly each time, would have hat on hat, and it should, the running play should be executed as it is, and then one guy messes up and then North Carolina just refused to miss a tackle. But as much as it is that, I cannot tell you how surprised I was. And maybe a lot of fans will call me naive, call me whatever you want, but that Marcus Major got a bulk of the carries, set a new career high in his collegiate life with 20 carries. And I know I'm the one that preaches, I hear what you say and I trust what you do with coaches, especially with PJ Fleck. So you hear all offseason, you want to be diverse, you know, diversify running backs you brought in. And that's where I go with, well, I hear what you said, but then I look at what they did. They brought in three transfer running backs, yet C.A. Bengura and Jaron Mangum were somewhere in a milk carton. Jordan Newbin only gets two carries. So my two questions to you are this, and I know they're very Dan Barrero-esque at this point, but were you surprised at the issues that the Minnesota Moving Company had up front? And then how surprised were you that P.J. Fleck, for the umpteenth straight year now, just decided we're going to have a bell cow back, even though we went out and grabbed so many different guys?
I was in the camp of, like, I knew that this scheme was going to be a major challenge for ID and just a lot of different variables coming at you that you have to adjust, like your front changes at the last second.
Jeff Collins's defensive team, who is the North Carolina defensive coordinator, who sat out last year and did not coach anywhere.
Correct. You know, stemming a front, moving something late, walking a guy down, like sending pressure from a different spot at the last second, disguising, tying your coverage and pressure packages together. And then, you know, they're catching you in the right look, you know, basically a lot. I mean, I think that they did a really good job of timing things up, altering identification for Minnesota's offensive line. I think, you know, Greg Johnson, big test. I mean, geez.
Huge test.
Center coming in here playing his first game against that type of defense. And I think the same thing could be said for Brosmer. Like, this is one of the more exotic schemes that you'll see probably for the season. And I think I'm interested to see how maybe some other teams build off of it. Like, you know, maybe Illinois this year has some of that wrinkle into it. They play kind of that similar style, well, they'll bail into stuff. You know, they'll show pressure presentations and bail out. I look at, like, for example, one that I pulled out was like early in the game, they're trying to set that pick play. They got like a slant flat with Jackson running a slant, and I think it was Newbin running into the flat
on third down.
And you know, you're in a too high coverage there, you know, and the flat curl corner is just able to drive down in there. I was thinking you're going to get man coverage, you know. So I felt like there were coverage indicator situations in the game that were, you know, advantageous. There's one corner route that Jackson ran where they identified he had zone, and Brosmer found it in there for a conversion that was key. I mean, there was a lot to be thrown at you. And I think there, what I would say, you know, moving forward is going to be key is like being able to really maybe get some like screens dashed in, get some quick hitting stuff to generate some plays after the catch. You're going to have to get to the point where you can get some guys to win on the perimeter. I think based on the coverage styles that they were playing, and you look at when they took a couple of shots there, they were able to draw a defensive pass interference. I think that one, Brosmer did a really good job of putting the ball in a spot to get the flag. But I think that like a combination of winning more vertically and also being able to get yourself in a spot where you're stressing teams horizontally and vertically so that you can get defenders out of the box and have better situations to run the ball into. And I also, your second question about backs, I think, you know, I thought maybe there'd be another back that come in the goal line situations maybe to spell Major. But, you know, that's kind of the style that PJ has used is, you know, run the back, get him a lot of touches, keep him in a groove, and that's the way that Minnesota's done it for a while.
So one of the big talking points, Luke, that I know a lot of fans want some discussion on, House mentioned it a little bit, but House, this is a passing game that lacked anything resembling verticality last year. They were one of the worst teams in college football in generating explosive passing plays. And technically, I say technically in air quotes, you look at the stats and Max Brosmer didn't attempt a single pass over 20 yards. Now, I say technically because he drew a couple of pass interference calls to Daniel Jackson with said shots, but they don't count because they aren't technically a pass attempt. But I think the thing that people want to know is, you're the X's and O's guru in my life, and that's why I love you dearly. Why didn't Minnesota, in your opinion, take more vertical shots last night? Was it not there? Was it lack of separation from the receivers? What were the biggest driving factors why Minnesota couldn't get loose?
I think that some of it was separation. Some of it was just, you know, game state. You're in situations where, like we say, you know, you're behind the sticks. You got an 8.1 average to go distance. So, you know, you're getting in a position where they're being very physical on the outside. And that's where you're able to draw a couple of pass interference penalties occasionally. I think, you know, motioning, stacking guys, trying to get like switch releases and rubs is the way to go. But then, like, when you time those up with coverage presentation changes, like there are several times where they're in passing down looks and you're thinking, man, maybe you're going to get a man coverage matchup here. And then it's like, bang, here you go. Coverage presentation change, bailing out, dropping into a different look, into two high and tamp two or other stuff like that. You know, those things alter the type of play calls, the execution of the play calls. The other one I was looking at too, like that early red zone trip, early in the game, they tried running a mesh concept with those crossing routes, and they got man coverage
at the line of scrimmage to Eliza Spencer.
It got deflected, but I think when you go back and look at that play, the spacing and the timing of that route was not quite perfect, and I think that altered maybe the ability to get that ball off a little bit quicker, or to time that up correctly, and it got deflected. But I thought that was a time where they had the right look dialed up, and it just they didn't execute it. So I think, like, based on what they had coming at them with all the different looks, Brosmer now, I think it's going to come down to, like, trying to get some high-efficiency, quick-hitting completions, some screen passes, like get the ball in space and try to create situations where maybe you can get some cleaner releases for guys. They were definitely trying to tighten it up to get some cleaner releases because of how physical they were being at the line of scrimmage to try to create space. They were motioning occasionally. They're using jet motion, but like it was a tough code to crack. And I think first and second down was the big factor in that game where it's like, you got to be more efficient so that you're not in spot. Your play action game will work better. You're not backed up. You played right into their hands. I mean, I tweeted leading into the second half, if you're not manageable to go distances, you're going to be in big trouble in the second half because then you allow them to dictate matchups.
All right, so Brosmer on the day, people are going to want to talk about this. He was 13 of 21 throwing the ball, 166 yards. You know, that's 62-ish%, right? Not bad. I'm curious on your guys' decision-making. He obviously had the one fumble. He's going to want that one back. I thought he made the right read to run the ball there, but I thought the decision-making was good. I think it's clear he's not incredibly athletic. He's adequately athletic, but I felt like he has fairly good pocket presence, makes some decent decisions. Definitely had some that he's going to want back that were balls. Like, think about Jameson Gears in the first quarter where he's running
that
wide
first
open.
Drive on that third down, he airmails it.
But like,
to your point, Luke, about his athleticism.
Yeah.
I think Max Brosmer is welcome to the Power Four moment athleticism wise last night was when he tried to outrun a 300-pound defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And he lost the foot race, which I don't know that he's ever lost a foot race, but that's the kind of athletes that you now face in the Power Four.
In general, I'm not as down as most people were on him. I think that, like we said, there are some throws he's going to want back. Like, I think of that one in the end zone to Elijah Spencer when they threw it and he threw it low, and it's a tough grab.
That's a very, very tough throw to put in that window.
But like,
well, yeah, it's cover zero pressure there. I mean, you're going to have to fit that into a real tight window.
But I liked that he threw it, right? And you kind of think to yourself, like, hey, maybe Spencer's got to make that catch. I know it's tough, but like, that's the difference between winning a football game and being a real elite offense, right? So all in all, I'm not down on Max Brosmer. I don't know about you guys. There's maybe some coaching and some scheme things I'm frustrated with. I didn't think it was bad play calling per se, but just some of the risk averseness that we continue to talk about through the years with a PJ Fleck led team. I'm just not down on Brosmer yet. I really wish this was the third game of the year, not the first.
I agree. And I'm good with not playing a Power Four team to start the season anymore. I'm tired of all that. Give me the layup games. But I mean, I thought Brosmer struggled. I mean, if you want to be frank about it, and I understand that, you know, you'll point to, and you're correct in that. I mean, Jeff Collins' defensive scheme is very difficult, especially when you don't know how he's going to deploy personnel. And I get that. But it's just some of those throws that you were hoping that the veteran quarterback coming in was going to make, to Luke's point on that first drive. Jameson Gears breaks on a deep in across the middle. He's wide open, sails high. You have that key third down in the third quarter to Christian Driver. He's open on a deep out. You missed the throw. Now, did he make some throws? He did. He also turned the ball over when North Carolina's linebacker with the giant club on his hand gets a little bit of extra because of it.
That mass helped for sure.
Yeah. But I think what I am curious to see is, I mean, again, I know a lot of people are already over Brosmer and I'm not, but he has every right to obviously change. I am very curious to see how over the next two games, you're going to be four touchdown favorites this upcoming weekend. You'll be double digit touchdown favorites. You'll be, you know, 14, 17 point favorites against Nevada. Can we please let Max Brosmer throw? Because yeah, you can win both games easily the next 2 weeks if you just run the ball and run for 300 yards. But my goodness, if we have not learned anything from the last few years, that's not how this passing game works. It's not a light switch. You need to work on it. Brosmer needs to get more confident against these better caliber of athletes, which he was spun up last night. And he even talked about it afterwards with us in that he'd never played in a game like that before, where national television, there's 50,000 people in the stands. And I think he was a little juiced to come out the gate. He found some rhythm maybe in that second half. You know, Luke, I want to come back to one play in the early fourth quarter here, but I'll let House give his Brosmer dissertation. I'm not giving up on Max Brosmer by any means. It wasn't the first impression I thought I was going to see, but that's also why you play the games, House. So where did you kind of fall after your rewatch of the game? How would you evaluate Max Brosmer's first start as a Gopher?
Well, I always look at it in the thirds. I mean, you gotta look at the sample size of games. Like, how do people perform over the course of like four games? And I think first game, you mentioned it, you know, you got the schematic thing, you got the unknown, you got elevating up to another level, the speed of the game. You know, you can try to simulate that in practice with your athletes on your defense and do a lot of different things, but until you go out and do it, you got the crowd, you got the weather, you got, you know, the delay, you got like all these different things going on. And I think, you know, there are things that, you know, Brosmer's going to learn from this experience that are going to inform the process of preparing and executing moving forward. And I thought, you know, you mentioned it, like the throw to Jamison Gears and then that one to Driver. I mean, there was a little pressure off the edge, but that was a big miss there too, that I think if you're able to convert that, you might have been able to sustain the drive on that 3-and-out, 1-minute drive in the second half. I thought that throw was potentially something that he'd like to have back. But I think that, like you say, this is the time to experiment a little bit in these next couple of games, try some things, see what works, implement some stuff that maybe will help him find a groove, especially on first and second down. I think your first and second down passing game, the quick concepts, the ability to just try to stretch teams horizontally a little bit and then be able to hit over the top, I think that's going to be kind of the key, is just using the next couple of games to try things. You know, you can physically impose, like you say, against a couple opponents coming up, but why don't you use some of these reps and opportunities in game action to get your passing game some reps?
So the one play I want to talk about, Luke, is one that you and I and a colleague of ours have spent way too much time on here in the last 6 hours. For frame of reference here, if you're a Gopher Illustrated member, I'd encourage you to go to the GIF Rewind. It's early in the fourth quarter. It's a third down. And Minnesota, I believe, has trips towards their own sideline, and they call a passing play. It's 3rd and 8. And Daniel Jackson ends up getting bracketed. So he has the nickel corner, and then he breaks inside, and the play side safety there comes down upon him. Well, guess what? Outside of him is Christian Driver, who ends up winning his route, plus the North Carolina corner falls down. Christian Driver is running wide open across the middle of the field. Brosmer's eyes are drifting to the right. Driver's to the left, gets pressure in his face, gets sacked. Now, the term of, I guess, contention's too strongly of a word, Luke. The term that we want to know, House, is in your opinion, on that specific play. Now, we're all prognosticating. We don't know what the read is, what option 1, 2, and 3 are there. But you know the play we're referencing. We talked about it in the pre-production meeting. That would have been the deep shot. That would have been a 70-plus yard touchdown, because there's no one within 20 yards of Christian Driver if Brosmer just gets one more second. Now, where do you lie on that? I know there's some people that it's, you know, he should have just taken the shot. He needs to have his eyes there. My opinion is, I think the second read was to the right. On that specific play, where do you think it was?
Yeah, I think it was to the right, and then pressure altered, obviously, from the right side there. You know, I think he kind of – you see him looking down the field, and he sees the bracket, and then he kind of steps to his right. And at that point, the defensive back is kind of just falling down. So I think what altered that ability to kind of step up and potentially take that shot is the pressure coming from his right. I think that's the bigger factor there. I think that, you know, Jackson was obviously the primary spot, and then you got that driver out from Gears, and then you got the back leaking out into the flat. Those were the first, you know, that was the first part of it, the progression there, I think. And then, you know, obviously the eyeballs ended up going in a different spot just because he started to feel the rush there, and then the DB fell down.
Yeah, and my argument is, you know, is Ryan, you and I have gone back and forth on this. is it's pretty clear that it's man-free is for your pre-snap read. And if you know, you know, the likelihood of that free safety bracketing, then you have clear leverage in the one-on-one with driver that you should at least try and think of it and give it a shot. You know, that's maybe not the progression, but from a pre-snap read, and then your post-snap is when you see that safety take that step over for bracket, you know you have one-on-one. What's it going to hurt to throw it up, right?
Because, I mean, you got kind of three concepts built into one on that play there. You know, you got the, like, the cross concept, you got the drive concept, and then, you know, you see the vertical route. It's like a dagger concept. You got the vertical route, and then you got Elijah Spencer running the dig in there. So it's like a shadow concept in a sense. They're putting multiple different concepts together. And so I guess it comes down to what is the specific progression that Minnesota has for that specific play. But it's kind of three route concepts built together. I think that they used this in the Purdue game last year a little bit, the specific route concept.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know. You guys got other thoughts offensively?
I would just say it's the thing where everybody only wants to talk about offense because it's here we go again.
Oh, it's everything.
Well, I understand because it's the, you know, it's the shiny object, but I think there's a lot of room to grow, especially when you start to have more game tape. Now, I'll say again, you're gonna beat the crap out of the Rhode Island Rams next weekend. You'll probably beat Nevada soundly too. You know what Phil Parker's Iowa defense is going to look like? They're essentially the same schematically year over year. House, you can correct me if I'm wrong in that.
Yeah, I mean, they're that personnel on that defense is going to be outstanding, and Phil Parker's got that thing flowing. That they're going to be a outstanding defense this year, fun to watch for sure.
But you're going to have more game tape and be able to know what you're going to see, and I think that's such an underrated part of this. Now, do we need to see the Minnesota Moving Company get their S together a little bit here?
For sure.
And be able to enforce their will a little bit more and be more consistent in every single play? Absolutely. But we've also seen seemingly every single year,
thank you,
Minnesota's offensive line is usually a little slow to start.
Yes, thank you.
Especially against stunts and twists and late line movement.
Yes.
And just different things of that nature. Now, it also doesn't help the running game when Darius Taylor isn't out there, which I would expect him back before Iowa from what I kind of understand at this point. He did warm up before the game last night, but obviously did not give it a go. But I just hope that these are the two things I want to see over the next 2 weeks, gentlemen. And they're very simple things, and you can correct me if I'm asking too much. How about you use four different tailbacks each of the next 2 weeks, because there's no point in putting 20 carries on any of them in the next two games. And then, oh, by the way, throw the ball 23 or more times with Max Brosmer. Now, are those unrealistic expectations? Am I insane for this? Luke, we'll start with you.
You're not insane. I just want to reiterate, like, this is the first game of the year. Ryan, I think you said in our preview that, you know, let's not get too bent out of shape no matter what the result. First games can be weird. This is a tough
one. This one was about as weird as we've seen in some time.
And conceptually, I think, House, you're totally onto something. I kept praising North Carolina, you know, defensively and what they were doing, right? And the reality is that you need to give credit where credit is due. They deserve some credit on defense. As frustrating as it could have been for the Gopher defense, you got to give them some credit. They give up as many touchdowns, right? I think this is weird. I think there's room to improve. I still think this can be a very fun season.
It can be. I think the thing we have to find out, House, is what was an outlier in this game and what is the beginning of a trend?
100%.
What is all the sloppy play, all the separate issues, offense, defense, and special teams, how much of it gets cleaned up here in the next 2 weeks because you're just facing an inferior opponent? And how much of this starts to begin into a trend? Because, House, I even think back to 2 years ago. Now, this is just one specific example. The second game of the year was against the Western Illinois Leathernecks, one of Daniel House's favorite former Missouri Valley institutions. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what Minnesota did in that game besides obliterate them? They could not rush the passer to save their life. And turns out that was the theme of that season. That was the takeaway, was Minnesota couldn't get any pressure. So the thing that I want to see, Mr. House, is what is a trend and what is a mirage? I mean, is that what you're also going to be looking for?
Fundamentals, improving discipline, not taking penalties, cleaning up detail things. And that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, that the penalty side of it is a weird outlier. Like, PJ's teams are always at the top of the country in not making those type of mistakes that are catastrophic. And I think they missed one. I think Eastern might have been offside on that. It was third.
You and I were very
tell you, that was pretty close. But I think that, like, that's what I'm watching for. Like, can you clean the fundamental stuff up? Because I think there's some things that you can build off of, like the way that they were able to set up pressures, the mismatch stuff, the looks that they deployed. I thought that Wally had a really good game on the outside, and Ethan Robinson, you can build off some of his stuff. I thought the corners played, you know, pretty well on the outside. Jack Henderson, like I said, big part of the scheme. Now it's like, can you clean up the tackling? Can you get better block deconstruction? Can you clean up the technical aspects of the game? And I think that that is something that you want to see improve it as the season goes on. Like, it's the first game. You kind of got to ease into it. Does it become a trend or is an outlier? Like you say, offensively, it's the same thing. I mean, what are you able to do in these next few games to test your passing game, try some things, get Brosmer comfortable, find a rhythm, attack vertically, and open up, take some pressure out of the box, and see exactly how it goes over the next few weeks here.
All right. Well, I think it's going to be a fun season. Daniel, I'm stoked you're with us for this breakdown, and you'll be with us for the other breakdowns here in the non-conference season. I'm going to be at this next game. I'm looking forward to that, bringing my boys. This is the first time my boys will be this will be their first Gopher football game. So I'm very excited for that. All in all, I still think there's an opportunity for a fun season. A lot can happen. It's also fun to watch a team improve as the season goes on. So again, want to thank all of you for listening. Want to thank Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. Want to thank Homefield Apparel and also the Burns Insurance Agency for making this possible. We'll see you for the next preview and go.